Welcome back to the Blessed Business Podcast. I'm your host, Hunter Haley, and I am joined again today by Josiah Aston. Welcome back.
Thank you. I really enjoyed our conversation last time. Looking forward to today.
Well, absolutely. I did too, enjoy it as well. We really just were starting to scratch the surface because we were getting all excited. And you can go so deep on the topic of wise money management. So this is going to be part two of practical steps to wise money management. So last time we talked a little bit about the importance of stewardship and then from the practical standpoint of raising awareness to where you're spending money, how you're managing your finances, how good of a steward are you, right? Taking inventory of that. And then starting by at number one being budgeting, you know, getting everything accounted for, counting the cost, right? Getting all those things together. And then number two is building up your savings and saving for both future needs and also goals. And so we're leading into that. And then we talked about things like, you know, creating a margin in your life, right? In your finances by getting a little bit extra in your savings, getting a little extra in your checking account, getting ahead on your bill money, things like that. So that was a good episode. We talked a lot about that as far as emergency funds. I don't know if we got fully into emergency funds, but you need to have ideally 3 to 6 months of expenses saved. Is that right? Let's kind of pick up back there and then we'll get into some more practical steps for, you know, dumping debt, managing debt, some practical tips for money management, and maybe a few other things before we have to wrap up again for today.
Yeah, let's do that. So kind of going to the emergency fund, the 3 to 6 months, before we get to that 3 to 6 months of expenses, most people, it would make sense for them to pay off all of their debt first. And the reason for that is, I mean, well, there's a few different reasons, but first of all, most of the debt that people have is high interest. It tends to be credit card debt. Even if it's student loan debt or something smaller, car loan debt, those tend to be in the 5 to 7% range, the car loans and the student loans. But what happens is a lot of people are uncomfortable with the idea of owing this money because it reduces your income potential. A lot of the income that you're bringing in, you have these obligations on a monthly, on a regular basis that you have to deal with or you have to pay. So if something went wrong, if you lost your job or your business didn't do as well as you had planned, or something didn't go as you had a really big unexpected emergency expense, then you end up in a place where now this debt becomes a chain around your neck and it becomes a massive burden that it weighs you down. It's already weighing you down, but now it suddenly comes to the forefront because you have, because you didn't pay it off. So, so that's one of the reasons. Now we could get into the whole discussion of good debt versus bad debt, or the idea of debt versus using debt to
people are all right.
Return on investment. I'm going to invest money into something that I know is going to bring a return, whether it's business or real estate or anything like that. I mean, you're a real estate developer, so you would understand all of that. But we're going to really focus in on the consumer debt because that's where people struggle. So when we talk about managing debt, before we could build up a 3 to 6 month emergency fund, but in the process of you building that up, if you still have the debt, you're losing a lot of money. You're working against yourself. Let me give you an example of that. So I have a client that I'm working with right now. Just met with her this week of this recording. She has $65,000 saved. In addition to, she has some other money she could access, like in a whole life policy. We could talk about whole life policies too, but let's just stick to what we have. She has $65,000 saved in a savings account, and then $35,000 of that she's actually working with an advisor to invest it. At the same time, she has $21,000 in 18% credit card debt, and she has $21,000 in car loan debt with at a 5% interest, which is not too bad, right? And then she has student loan debt of around $70,000. So you could argue that the student loan and the car loan debt, that, well, she can arbitrage. What the term that's often used is arbitrage, where you can play the market. If you can get 10% return on your investment in the market, then you're actually making more with your interest than you're paying on the student loan or paying on the car loan. So you might as well keep that money in the market.
Sure.
And so you could do that, but that's not what she's doing right now, right? She's got $30,000 that's just sitting there, a 3 to 6 month emergency fund, but she is losing over $5,000 a year in that credit, just the credit card interest alone.
Wow.
When you calculate that out, $21,000 times 18% interest, and I might have that slightly, I need to double check the numbers,
but when
I calculated it with her, she was losing over $5,000 a month in interest. $5,000 a year in interest. Mm-hmm. And so not only is that costing her in the long run, but it also is reducing her income. It's reducing her the amount of money that she can use to put towards things she cares about. She's trying to cash flow education right now. It's really hard for her. She's tight because she has this other debt. And so the easy answer for her is to pay off the $21,000 in credit card debt at least, and then immediately saves her a few hundred dollars every month in interest, a few hundred more, I mean, more like seven or eight. I think all the credit cards were like $1,100 in minimum payments. Oh, so wow. Something like that. Maybe it was only $700 in minimum payments, but either way, she'd save that. Now she's bringing that in as income and not having to pay it out. And then she can much faster, she can go right back to building up that emergency fund again, and she'll be in a better position in the long run.
Well, and this so, brings up a very interesting point. And I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but
yeah,
this brings
it.
Up an interesting point, because this is a good example of someone who has done fairly well financially. I mean, if you can save up $65,000, you know, and or have $30,000 in a savings account, you're mm-hmm. doing okay, right? So
yeah.
you can feel like you're doing okay, but yeah. if sometimes we have a limited perspective and we get very hyper-focused, and there may be any, and I don't know this client, I'm not asking you to divulge information about this person, but there may be reasons why they have mm-hmm. held on to the $30,000 rather than paying off debt. It may be a security blanket. It may be mm-hmm. a feeling like I can't let go of that because there may be an emotional attachment to, like, I mm-hmm. saved all this money, or, you know, whatever. And so that's why it's so good to bring an outside perspective in sometimes. And I'm glad that's what you do, is, you know, you're a financial coach, and people can, you know, find out more about, you know, your services or finding, you know, someone like you. I'll put your link to your website in the show notes. But even if it's not, you know, hiring Josiah to be your coach, while that could be a good thing, is finding someone to help you be accountable and getting an outside perspective, instead of just saying, I'm digging myself into a hole, or I can't get traction, or whatever your scenario is, and just sitting there. Because as a steward, you need to take advantage of the opportunities and the resources at your disposal, whether it's podcasts like this, whether it's, you know, hiring a coach for a time to get things straightened out, whatever that looks like. Is part of being a wise money manager is getting help. You know, I have a CPA, a certified public accountant, do my taxes. I have bookkeepers that do my bookkeeping, right? Because, and mm-hmm. that costs me money, but to manage my business and to manage my finances wisely, I need those people. I need that help. So.
Yes. Yes. And that is huge. To be willing to ask for help is the first hurdle. And then once you get to that point where you realize I've got to do something different, I really need that perspective. I need to see my blinds past my blind spots. That's when you get to a point where you recognize that the help that you get is worth the investment. And so, so that's, cause it is that's really good. It is an investment because obviously
there's a return.
You're not going to return. Yeah. Well, there is a return and you're not going to usually find the help that you need without some investment.
Right.
Even if you were able to find a financial coach, for example, for free, you would still have to invest your time, your effort. You'd have to actually do the work. And what often happens is that if you don't invest money along with that, then the time and the effort are not become not worth it to you. You don't put value on it. So, but just kind of going back to the debt, you mentioned that it could be because of a security blanket. It could be. Yeah. So that is exactly why she was unable to get rid of this $30,000. Even after knowing what the interest is, she still struggles with the concept or the idea of actually giving up $21,000 and put it towards a credit card debt. And wow. When you think about that, it's like, well, that's not logical. But finance is not all logic. And that is why I do what I do. Because...
A lot of it is emotion driven.
It's human behavior. And it was also on her part, a lack of knowledge. So it's a lack of knowledge, but it's a paradigm. Like you're being told all your life, you need to save and you don't, and you're being told by the credit card companies by the fact of how easy it is for you to spend on these things that you don't realize what it's doing to you. They don't talk about the amount of interest you're going to be paying. They only talk about all the perks and the money you're going to, the cash back that you're going to get by using those cards. And so what you end up with is you end up with a society or people that they're in this paradigm, like where this is just how it is. I'm supposed to be saving. And the debt is, they don't realize what the debt is doing to them or what it's costing them. And they're not ready to give up the savings because it is a security blanket. Mm-hmm. And I actually had one client who was like, I think it was my very first long-term client where she had like $22,000 in debt, no, $22,000 saved and $28,000 in credit card debt. And she was not able to give up that $22,000 or part of it. Even at first, eventually I got her down to where she only had $5,000 left in her savings and paid off the rest of the credit card debt. And then she was able to pay off a whole bunch of other debt that she had. But, so it worked. We got there, but it took time to kind of, because for her, she'd never had $22,000 at one time. So for her, it was a lack. It was like, I've never had this much money. I'm never going to have this much money again. I don't want to let go of it.
Right. Well, and I think going back to the wise money management side of it, really what we're dialing in here is a lot of people's mindsets trap them in poor financial habits. So it's a behavior thing, right? And so you have to identify, and going back to what we talked about in the first part of this, is you have to bring awareness to the situation, but also you're kind of acting as like a detective to uncover, why am I feeling this way about money? Why is this such a big deal? Why am I doing the things that I'm doing? And so I think a big part of it is being willing to shift your money mindset. And that's a big, big thing about money. They say, you know, making a lot of money or having a lot of money or being a wise steward, investing money, et cetera, it's really what happens between your ears. The money, you know, the difference between someone who has a lot of money and someone who doesn't, in most cases, wasn't necessarily that they were more smart. You know, they weren't more brilliant, right? They weren't just luckier, right? So, I mean, sometimes that's the case, but rarely that's what it is. It usually boils down to mindset and discipline. Those are usually the two things that I've seen that makes a big difference. People say, Hunter, I want a successful real estate company like you've got or whatever, and God's blessed us. And number one, I give glory to God and I identify that. But I also say, well, do you want to spend 300 or 400 hours digging out the knowledge to do this business model before you make a single dime? And they're like, well, I mean, no. I'm like, okay, well, then you're not ready yet. And so not that everyone has to do that, you know, and I've developed courses and stuff to help shorten the curve, kind of like what you're doing. You're helping shorten people's learning curve. on the financial mm-hmm. management side. And so it's good to take advantage of books and resources and podcasts and courses and different things to shorten that. But at the end of the day, you have to be committed to this. So so we've covered a number of things. We've in both part one and part two, we've talked about awareness, budgeting. We've talked about savings and kind of managing that and balancing that with life needs. We've talked about managing debt. But let's cover a few tips for better money management. So we've talked about some of the big issues, but let's go into some more just real practical things that we can do that maybe are a little bit smaller, but that are very practical steps that people can start doing today.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is when we talk about just tips in general with your finances, I'm not really much of a tips guy. And what I mean by that is I kind of look at it as this continuum, right? In order for you, for this tip to work for you, you have to have this piece in place.
It has to fit within the framework.
And so if you think about, so if we just kind of break down a few of those tips that we've already covered, number one is know your money. Know your mindset around money. So know your mindset around money, know your money. And then what does it take to do that? A very specific practical tip is start budgeting. But then, as we broke down in the first part of this series here, we broke it down that budgeting has those three major steps, right? So plan, track and categorize, readjust and reallocate. And then another tip here that we haven't talked about yet, but I think this is really important, is to get your spouse or get an accountability partner. Get your spouse involved with you, especially if you're married. You need to work with your spouse. That is a whole nother conversation, especially for people who traditionally have kept their finances separate, or who have been burned so badly that they feel like they can't trust their spouse with their money, or they can't trust anyone with their money because of a past divorce or a past situation that happened where they've lost money. And so
and that leaves people scarred, and so they become scared. But you have to be willing to embrace that, and that's part of the awareness piece of, okay, why am I behaving this way? And then rationalize that away and say, okay, but I'm going to choose to not let that negative experience control my financial future. So
yes. Yeah. And so that's almost another tip there. I love what you just added there. But then another tip, kind of a general tip here is, and this comes from, I like the way that Byron Tanner, he's a certified financial planner that I've worked with, and we did I interviewed him for one of my programs, and he helped my clients with the power of investing. But he likes to use the phrase, start where you are.
That's good.
Start where you are. Wherever you are at right now in the journey, you need to start and do something now. Don't wait. Good. Why? Because you have opportunity. You have potential. You need to turn that into purpose. And this is this is not what he said. I'm obviously adding my own flavor here, but you need to turn that potential into purpose. You need to create something of what God has given you. If God's given you these resources, he didn't give them to you to bury. He gave them to you to manage, to steward, and they will only grow. They will only become something, whether it's directly the money being invested and so that money grows, or whether it's that money being invested in your life, in yourself, in your family, in your church. Wherever that money is going, it needs to be put somewhere that you care about and it needs to be put towards your purpose so that it means something and it's not just being lost or wasted. So start where you are. And another tip, I think, is, and we've already alluded to this, I said get on board with your spouse, and I mentioned for a single person, that might just be getting an accountability partner. But I would say ask for help and get the right people on your team. If you are a business owner, and then you probably should try to get some help when it comes to your finances, whether it's an accountant or a Profit First, somebody working with someone to implement Profit First and get your money allocated in the right direction, or whatever the case may be. You want to make sure that you are managing your business finances well. But if you're not a business owner, it still applies. You should get the help that you need. And I'm going to say, yeah, I mean, it's like I said, I'm not much of a tips guy. So when I think, okay, well, what's some general tips I can throw out there? One is another one that kind of fits with the framework that I use is get clear on your goals. What do you care about? Because we've already mentioned, we talked about what you care about. We already mentioned like everything needs to be directed towards that purpose. Well, in order to know, to direct stuff towards the right ends, you need to know what those ends are. So what is the end? What do you care about most? Where do you want to go with your family? A lot of times people will tell me stuff like, I just want to get out of debt. I want to be more comfortable with my finances. I want to save a bunch of money. And what those goals in and of themselves, they can be motivating. They can help to relieve stress and anxiety, but ultimately they are means to an end. Mm-hmm. You're getting out of debt. Why? You're getting out of debt because you want to do something else with your money.
Right.
I don't want to feel stressed or anxious or frustrated with my money, but you also want to do something with it, right? I want to save money. Why? Because I just want that financial cushion. Why?
So drilling down to that.
Drilling down. So if you can take the time to drill down and get clear on why you want to manage your finances better, you're going to be much more motivated. You're going to stick with it longer. You're going to maintain that momentum.
That's good. Well, I have a couple of tips myself that I've actually looked up some of these, and some of these are from my personal experience. But in addition to everything that you've talked about, and these kind of go hand in hand with it, is live within your means by spending less than you earn. And I think this goes back to the budgeting piece is if you don't budget for savings, if you don't have a category for savings, then you will spend every dollar that you earn. You're going to blow it somewhere, somehow, right? So if you aren't clear on your goals, then it's going to be difficult to save. And if it's difficult to save, then you're not going to be living within your means. It's going to be easy just to like expand your lifestyle and just, oh, the money's there, spend it. And then kind of going hand in hand with that is prioritize needs over wants, focusing on essential expenses first. So like to use a Dave Ramsey reference, this is about giving. One time I heard him speak about this, and he was talking about how people give tithes and offering or whatever. And he said, well, by the time we get to the end of all of our bill money and stuff, and we pay all of our bills and all the things we want to do, we don't have money left over to give. He said, that's because your budget's upside down. You have to prioritize giving to the kingdom of God first, right? And the same thing with like paying your mortgage. You want to pay your mortgage before you up your out to eat budget. Right? Because out to eat is optional. It's a luxury, America, right? or wherever you're at. And so, you know, it's not a necessity. We may say, well, but I work a job. I have to go to lunch every day. No, you can pack a lunch, right? You can, you can definitely reduce that. So I think prioritization is key, you know, prioritizing needs and the essential expenses first. And then this is a big one for me. And me and my wife have talked about this, is I'm an impulsive spender. Well, she thinks I'm an impulsive spender. I've been planning and strategizing and researching that new product that I want to buy for months. And it just so happens that the money's there. So I happen to pull the trigger on it. Right. So in one sense, it seems impulsive, but on the other sense, I've been wanting to impulsively buy this for a long time, but that's kind of our internal joke. But avoid impulse purchases. Okay. And you mentioned sinking funds. If you want something big, you want a new camper for a good goal, you know, to take your family camping, or you want to go on that family vacation, or you want to buy that new car or new used car or whatever. Mm-hmm. Then creating a sinking fund where you sink money into that fund and that separate savings account or that separate whatever, where you put money away for it, that helps you avoid impulsive desires. And instead, you're practicing discipline in your finances to be able to really move towards something. And that's really what stewardship, again, is about, I think it was the word of my pastor, Pastor Caleb Adams, had mentioned this one time. Hopefully I'm not misquoting him on this, but that meekness is not weakness, but it's controlled strength. And so you have to harness. It's like a strong horse that has a bridle in its mouth, where it is being directed. But that stallion, he's very strong. He's a war horse, right? He's going into battle. But the meekness is that controlled strength, like a leader, you know, like we've talked about on some other podcasts about, you know, conflict and delegation stuff. As a leader, you can come down harsh on people, right? Because you've got the power, right? You've got the strength. Or instead, what you can do is you can kind of temper that with meekness and say, okay, I have the strength, I have the position to make this person's life difficult or to really crush them, but instead I'm going to find out how to do it in a different way. Well, I think that the same thing applies to stewardship. Is yes, you can spend everything you earn, right? Yes, mm-hmm. you can do these things. You have financial freedom. You've been given by God free will, and you thankfully are in a position where you have extra income to allocate to something, right? But meekness is when you discipline that down, that financial discipline.
Yeah.
And especially if you're really good at making money, you're like, well, I'll just, as Dave Ramsey says, I'll earn my stupidity, right? I don't have to have financial you know, I don't have to abide by these same financial rules because they feel like it's a bunch of rules. Instead, they just want to, you know, just out-earn that. And so I think those are some things that are important. Another one is utilizing financial tools and apps to help track and manage your finances. You talked about that. You talked about paying yourself first by setting aside savings and investing before allocating money to other expenses. You mentioned profit first, which is a good approach. Let's see here. Diversify your income sources to reduce financial risk and increase financial stability. As a business owner, part of wise money management is having multiple streams of income, right? And so you were talking about this even in your business model earlier about, hey, there's different ways that, you know, you can implement because you're a wealth of knowledge, Josiah, and you're able to apply those skills towards helping individuals. But what I was talking to you about earlier, if it's okay if I share this, is that you can also share that wisdom and knowledge with entrepreneurs and business owners and people in business to help run their business manage their business finances better. There's a lot of small business owners I talk to that don't have a business budget. They run all their personal and business money together. They don't have separate accounts, and like it gets really messy, right? Well, that's not really, you know, a lot of times people aren't going to hire a CPA to tell them to do all that. You know, at the same time, they need somebody to be that accountability partner, especially as they become more successful. So I think that's good.
Well, those are some great tips. I want to just real quick before we finish up here, I want to say one final thing about one of those tips. And I think it kind of will wrap up a little bit of what I said from the very first part of that awareness. You talk about discipline in your finances. You talk about we have a responsibility to be a better steward. We have a responsibility to manage this well, and we need to basically make sure that we're living on less than we make. We're prioritizing our needs over our wants, as you said. We're avoiding impulse purchases. That feels a lot. It seems so simple, but it's really hard when it comes to actually in practice. Why is it so hard? Well, because we're relying on willpower. Mm. And because we are trying so hard to do this, and we don't have the structure set up. or we don't have the dreams and motivations ahead of us. We don't have that purpose kind of laid out. We don't have a plan in place. We don't even know what's going on with the money. So that's where I find a lot of people struggle, is trying to take those intentional, willpower-directed actions without first being aware, and second, being clear on what those goals and dreams are. And third, then you can start to be very intentional and try and about it. But even then, you don't want to just rely on willpower. You need to get accountability. Mm-hmm. You need to focus on one thing at a time. If you're trying to do all of those tips that you just mentioned all at once, you will struggle. If you do really try to develop a habit of just one of those over time, and then as you've developed new habits around that tip or around that, let's say it has to do with avoiding impulse purchases by implementing a waiting period. Okay. You can do that. You can work on that, but let's make that a habit. And then we'll focus on maybe something else. So if that's a problem, mm-hmm. that needs to be the focus.
And identify, so that's kind the hotspot areas, work yes. on those, and then layer in your financial.
Layer in the other pieces.
Yes. Gotcha. Man, that's awesome.
Yes.
Well, thank you again, Josiah, for joining us. Again, I'll have a link to his website and other additional resources in the show notes, but this has been a good conversation today. And I want to leave us with this quote from Robert Kiyosaki, who's an avid entrepreneur, kind of just a really interesting perspective. He talks a lot about how you think about money. And one of his quotes is, "It's not how much money you make, but how much money you keep. How hard it works for you and how many generations you keep it for," right? And so wise money management and being a wise steward of finances goes far beyond just how much money you're making and what you're doing with it, but it's how much you keep, how hard it's working for you. And again, this is another topic for another day, but investing and getting passive income and those other income streams. But then also what I really like is how many generations you keep it for, because we want from the blessed business standpoint, we want to encourage people and empower people to make financial decisions and to have financial tools to be able to start and grow blessed businesses, but to also develop good careers. But those are so that they can have finances to bless both themselves, change their family tree, but also contribute to the kingdom of God, both financially and by demonstrating what it means to be a wise steward in the marketplace. When people look at your life, they should say, you know what? I never see them stressed about money. You know, they seem to be blessed. I want what those people have, because if you do it according to the biblical pattern, it just works. It just works.
Yes.
So,
awesome.
Well, again, thank you so much for your time today. This has been a good conversation, and I look forward to hopefully future conversations. And then, like I said, we'll have information in the show notes below. And thank you so much for your time.
Sounds great. All right. Thank you so much for having me, and I really enjoyed the conversation.
All right. Well, again, tune in next time for more content. Subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. And do us a favor, share this with friends and family and anyone you know that would find benefit to this. Thank you, and God bless.